Blog Talk Radio.
Welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today's October 29th, 2010. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Along with hosting In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at www.bringforth.org. That's Bring, the number 4, TH, bringforth.org. I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you'll be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When done, I will put you back on mute, at which time you can either continue to listen to the show by phone, or you can hang up and listen to the show on your computer. When submitting questions, please remember, this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. You're listening to the worthy successor to last year's live chat on the Bring Forth website. This is our second show on primetime. We will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Well, hi, Carla. How are you doing? How's your week been going?
Hey, Monica. It's been going well. I've been enjoying the cooler weather here, but we still haven't gotten any rain. I do think that it's an unusual weather pattern we're experiencing here.
Oh, yeah. The same here. We've still been running the air conditioner until 2 days ago. We actually got our first cold front of the season only a month late. So yeah. Global warming, nah, that's a myth. Just ask anyone in Texas. We used to actually have winters down here, not anymore. Although we did have a bit of one last year, but very late, very, very different from the way it used to be. I actually got a garden planted. We've got a fall garden going, so planted some strawberries. They actually winter over down here, and some cabbage and lettuce and spinach and cauliflower and all kinds of goodies, so we're having fun with that. Well, we've got a few questions submitted through the bringforth.org website, and our first question is from Shemaya, and Shemaya says, "Hi, Carla and Monica. Carla, I would like to ask you from the bottom of my heart, thank you from the bottom of my heart. You and Kuo and Ra have helped me so much in the last couple of years on my path of awakening. Just from reading and listening to your wise words, you have blessed my heart and spirit immensely. Thank you, and much thanks to Monica and everyone else that helps and supports the spiritual work that you do. My question has to do with power. My path recently has been a path of empowerment. How would you define spiritual power? What are the differences and similarities in power of those who choose service to self compared to those who choose service to others? And how do we achieve balance with power, wisdom, and love? You talked about this in the last show a bit. Can you expand? As someone who has either been overbalanced towards love and given up my power because of love, or at times used my power in unloving ways, how does one maintain their power and remain loving at the same time? With love, Gina."
Hey, Gina. It's really heartwarming to hear your kind words, and thank you so much for your support and your love. I really feel it. It's wonderful to share energy with you this evening. Gina, I'll have a couple of different things to say. Your first part of the question was about how would you define true spiritual power? Monica, you check me on this. I want to make sure I answer the question that's asked.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. True spiritual power is definitely very polarized. If it's positive power, in other words, if you, using your magical personality, are empowered, the way you are empowered is in service to others. And normally, that starts with service to the infinite creator. In fact, the White Western magical tradition requires the magician to work only with the creator. There is no energy expanded on individual people. It is to express devotion to the creator, to move closer to the creator, to cleanse a place so that all that remains is the original love and light of the creator, that kind of energy expenditure. If you are expending your power in service to self, then you are attempting to control and manipulate others. So it's a fairly clear division between using your power in a spiritual sense in a positive way and using it in a spiritual sense in a negative way or in service to self. So when you are thinking about using your power, the first question that you would ask yourself is, am I attempting to control or manipulate any other person? If you are, then you're on the wrong track if you're in service to others, and obviously you are. So that's a really good rule of thumb. Now, in terms of balancing love, wisdom, and power, that is the kind of question that eats up incarnation after incarnation. I think we try consistently and continuously through our incarnations and between incarnations to achieve a balance between those three energies of the Creator. It's interesting to note that one of the reasons the Ra Group gave for the three of the original LL research team, Don Elkins, Jim McCarty, and me, for being effective in being able to contact those of Ra, was that we were all three distorted towards one of those three energies. I was distorted more towards love, Don was distorted more towards wisdom, and Jim was distorted more towards power. So when we got together in service to the Creator, we put out a fairly powerful and pure signal. This is what those of Ra said. So short of taking three people to get one balance, when you're trying to balance yourself, before every incarnation, you sit down with your higher self and you really take a good look at your soul stream and you ask yourself, where is the distortion? How can I lessen the distortion? In other words, increase the balance. And usually, it's a dynamic between love and wisdom and love, power and wisdom, power and love. So you're right on in focusing your question there. And I guess what you need to ask yourself, and you said something about probably you were more balanced in service in the love energy than you were in wisdom, so you felt perhaps in the past that you had given away your power because of love. Well, when you are looking to use your power, you're really looking to work on your own balance, not the balance of yourself and anyone else, not for anyone else or against anyone else. It's strictly within yourself, because of course you are all things. So working on yourself is working on the universal balance, and very specifically working on the balance in your soul stream. So once you've got it figured out that probably you're working to balance power and love, then what you want to do is look and see, when you approach a decision point, to make sure that you have not yielded your power in the all-encompassing sweep of love. Also, you want to make sure you have not yielded your love in the all-encompassing sweep towards power. You're looking for a balance between those two. So you ask yourself, what am I trying to do? What is this person asking of me? What am I asking of myself in regards to this other person? And does doing what this person wants or doing what I want in regard to this person take away my power? And if it does, then there may be a boundary that has to be drawn so that you are not disempowered. But the object of your power always needs to be your own discipline, your own goals, your own intention that you are setting. So it is easy to give up your power in a relationship. It's easy, especially in this society, Gina, if you happen to be a female, because so often, even now, even with all of the consciousness raising that we've gone through in the last two generations, there is a tendency for people to expect the woman in a relationship to make all of the sacrifices and to honor a man's responsibility over that of a woman. It's an unusual attitude from the cosmic viewpoint, because we're all equal from the cosmic viewpoint. Yet the society puts pressures on women that they would never dream of putting on men. So it's really good to keep a cool head and to take some time, always, you know, sleep on it. And if you're still not sure, sleep on it again. And just really come to a balance within your own self about this choice that you're going to have to make. And when you make the choice, make it empowered, but also in a feeling of compassion and love, so that you're not in the position of saying, you're not in the position of saying, okay, it was either me or you, and you had to go. That's really not it. You're still trying to do the best that you can for your relationships, for yourself, for the Creator. But there does need to be that balance where you don't simply yield your opinion and your heartfelt belief system because of someone else's request. So stand on your own two feet and be compassionate, but at the same time, do what's necessary so that you can do what you feel is the right thing. Not in reference to any other human being, but only in reference to your relationship with the Creator. Monica, what have I missed in that question? Is there an aspect that I could...
I think you addressed all of her questions, but you touched upon a very key element, I think, I'd like to ask for you to expand upon a little bit, and that is the aspect of your personal power being... The personal power over yourself and being firm in whatever you feel is important to you, as opposed to power over another person. And I'm wondering if that might be something that could be addressed as far as how to really know the difference. I know you touched on it a little bit, but I'm not sure if I'm formulating my thought very well here. In other words, people often equate power with the ability to control others, and as you said, that's the difference between the STS and the STO way.
Right.
So maybe could you expand a little bit on how to see where that boundary is? In other words, being firm on your own convictions.
Sure.
With that. Okay.
Well, let me just tell a couple of stories there, because really it's an anecdotal art. It's not a science. But there were a couple of times when I felt that my power was being taken away by a relationship and by my desire to be loving and gentle and a good person. Whatever mask is involved in that is intended by me. I think we all have masks and desires to be a good person and so forth that sort of float along with our more heartfelt desires to serve. And it's a lot of times it takes a while to separate out all of the strands of a situation so that you understand yourself, you understand where you are coming from. One of these situations was with a relative of mine who felt that I was possessed by the devil or I would not be channeling. And for over 20 years, I just absorbed his criticisms and his condemnation and his constant request for me to stop channeling without defending myself in any way. This was a good thing. This was very good practice for me. But eventually, I discovered that I was going to have to object and that my relationship with this person was toast because I could not trust him anymore. And so I realized that it was time to draw a boundary and to say, we're not going to do this anymore. And I said, I'm not going to come and visit you. We won't be doing Christmases together. I still love you just the same, but I really can't deal with this conversation happening a 24th time. By my count, it had happened 23 already. So you see, I was patient with the guy, but eventually I just realized, no, I was utterly powerless to do anything because I was trying to be a Christian to him, you see, because he was coming from a conservative Christian viewpoint and condemning me. So I was trying not to condemn him. But finally I said, you know, I'm not condemning you, but we can't have this conversation anymore. It's just too painful for me. And about 2 years later, he resolved it. And he called up and he said, I can promise you not to have that conversation again. So I didn't do anything to him. I simply removed myself. And the second time that this happened to me was with a colleague who abused me in several different ways. And finally, I think the point at which I realized something had to be done came when he wrote a 9-page rant condemning me in all different kinds of ways.
Whoa!
And I sat down. I spent an entire day answering each and every accusation. And it was done in an energy of love, and I sent it off. Think, well, boy, that was a wasted day. But I didn't realize how wasted it was until the guy said to me, well, he said, thank you very much for that. I always wondered what a positively oriented person would do if they were hit with something like that, and now I know. He said, I knew that nothing in there was real, but I just wanted to see what you would say. So it was a waste of time. So I sat down and I wrote him and I said, dear so-and-so, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Carla Ruckert. I love the Law of One and I know you do too. And if we work together, I would be delighted to work with you. Thank you so much for loving the Law of One. I just thought I'd introduce myself to you. And all attempts that he made to have a relationship with me that was personal in nature after that were politely rebuffed because there was no way to connect with him in a way that did not remove my power. So it's a very personal thing. You have to realize that you're psychically being sapped, and then you have to determine for yourself what loving energy you can put to a solution that does not condemn another person, but simply rights the situation so that you have your power back.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, or
yes.
can we poke at it from another? Okay.
I think it does. Thank you. And I'd like to remind everyone that we do have the chat room open at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. please feel free to join us in the chat room and submit your questions there. And if anyone calls in at 347-884-8770, be sure to press the 1 key if you would like to join the show. When I see that you've pressed the 1 key, I'll go ahead and unmute you and you can ask your question. Or you can just continue to listen on the phone. We do have a question from Norrell in the chat room. Norrell says, "Hi, Carla and Monica. I have a question. Can you please talk about connectedness? It seems the main problem we have as human beings is feeling disconnected from each other. What could you suggest to help us feel more connected to one another and to the natural world we live in? Thanks."
Well, thank you, Norrell. That's a beautiful question and one at the very heart of the spiritual path. I'm answering as a Law of One fan. And going from the beginning of the Law of One, which is that we are all one. Now, I realize this is completely counterintuitive. It doesn't feel like we're all one. It feels like we're monads. And philosophies have been built on that, that we're just all completely self-enclosed, waiting for Godot, unable to connect with anyone else in a successful fashion. However, on the most basic metaphysical level, we are already all one. We share one consciousness. That consciousness is a consciousness of unconditional love, the one infinite creator's original thought, the Logos. So, like most things that are metaphysical, you start with faith. You don't end up believing or having faith because of your investigations into the metaphysical. In order to progress in an accelerated manner, you start with faith and you take it on faith that we are all one, that we do share one consciousness. And then you start relating to people through that understanding. This immediately eliminates a lot of distance between people. Because usually, when you're relating to someone else, you're relating on the basis of surface things. You're relating on things you may have in common, how you may like this person, how you may be attracted to this person, how you may have this or that in common. But in relating to people at the soul level, you find yourself relating to another part of the Creator. So I think the shortest route to lessening the distance between yourself and others is to practice seeing others as the Creator. Now, in order to do this successfully, you must start with yourself. Because unless you can see yourself as the Creator, there's not a lot of chance you're going to see other people as the Creator through and through. So, and another good reason to start with yourself is that you have control over yourself, in that you can ask yourself questions and get answers. You can work to discipline yourself. You can choose to do this or choose to do that. You can figure out what you desire. You can know yourself in a way that other people will not know you while everyone is in third density and unable to be aware of each other's thoughts. So your first challenge in connecting really well to other people is to connect really well with yourself and fall in love with yourself just as you are, forgiving yourself for being human, forgiving yourself for all your errors, forgiving yourself for all the, what can I say, the brain dead moments that we've all had in our lives, and realizing, yeah, okay, we're all bozos on this bus, but we are all on the bus together, and we are all well-intentioned for the most part. So if you start with seeing the other entity as the Creator, then you can rest in that connection, which is genuine. taken from the standpoint of faith. And then you can listen to what that entity has to say and relate to that person in support, in encouragement, in good advice if asked for it, in silence if not asked for it, but at the soul level, so that you're not involved so much in people's behaviors, in their appearances, in their masks, or even in what pressure they're putting on you, but only in seeing them as a part of the Creator. Now, this is a very creative way to relate to other people because, again, it's counterintuitive. Generally, we relate very much on the surface and very much impulsively. So it takes a good bit of self-discipline to take that half a step back, connect with the person on the soul level, saying, as John Lennon did, I am you as you are me and we are all together. That's not a correct quote. I never get it right. But that's the idea, is to relate to people with that already understood within yourself. And then you're on balance. And what is asked of you, you know, becomes a choice point. And you think to yourself, how may I respond to this in love and in power and in peace? And then you choose your response carefully. And then with the utmost of honesty and sincerity and compassion that is in you, you relate to this person. And this person can be very important to you, or it can be a clerk in a store that you've never been to before. It's a virtual stranger, but it's also the Creator. So I think if you relate to people like this, doing the work, the mental work, the emotional work of preparing yourself for meeting the Creator in all of those whom you meet, things open to you because of that attitude that would not otherwise open to you. And you suddenly find yourself in a position to appreciate people in a way that you never did, and to feel that shared energy. And that's another thing, Monica, that we don't really do enough, is when I'm talking to Gina over the airwaves, I am taking the time mentally to realize that I am sharing energy with her, that she has put it out there. And as I am talking with her, there is an actual energy exchange going on. It's easier to do this in person, of course, or if she were on the phone with me, so that I could hear her voice and make some kind of contact to something that hit my five physical senses. But in the absence of that, I can still feel her energy. I can still enjoy sharing the energy with her and welcoming the way her aura and my aura blend. And, you know, I can feel how harmonious it is and how beautiful and what good colors that we have together. So it's good to practice feeling that as you're communicating with your friends or with acquaintances or somebody that you've just met at a party or in a store, is to let yourself sense into that energy stream that is that person's signature. They have an essence that is unspoken. And I've always hoped that when people hit me, that they would first feel Christ and then they would feel me. That's the goal for me, is to be that person that I am at heart, and I think all of us are at heart, which is unconditional love, which Jesus is an excellent example of. So I use the word Christ, but I don't necessarily mean it for Christians. I'm trying to indicate that we are all creatures made of love. So when we're relating to each other at the soul level, we can relate to something beautiful that we have in common, which is our fundamental nature, the one great original thought.
Okay. Well, it does not appear that Noral has a follow-up question. So Thank you for that, Carla. And I'm going to move on to the next question submitted at the bringforth.org forum. And you can submit your questions at bringforth, that's bring, the number 4th.org. And you can also submit them by emailing me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Or you can call us live at 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. The next question is from Tylon102480. Hi, Carla and Monica. Thank you for all your services to others that you so gladly do. I've been drawn to your great service of the Law of One. I always learn something from your sessions with Ra. It clarified many things that I felt I knew. I have a couple of questions that I humbly ask that you answer. Are you familiar with a book called, now I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, Sia Uba, Prophecy? I was just recently drawn to find it and read it. It is very similar to Ra's teachings with the exception of our current density. Theo, the entity that assisted the writer, says that there are 9 densities, if you will, and that this planet is of the lowest of the densities, first. Also that the people of this planet, which is called Thea Uba, are of the highest density, ninth. What input could you give us to clarify this? I feel that the people of Thea Uba aren't at a higher density than that of Ra. I thank you and send you love and light. Tylon Ferreira.
Well, thank you, Tylon. This gives me an opportunity to do a couple of things. I'll be glad to answer your query insofar as I can. But the first thing that I would say is that I make it a practice not to indicate my opinion of someone else's channeling. There's a good reason for that. And I learned this on an airplane. I was flying to the West Coast to do some teaching, and I had just read a book called Rampa, and I put it down. I read it on the airplane. I put the thing down after I finished it. It was a real quick read. And I was thinking to myself, boy, what marshmallow fluff that was, and thinking pretty judgmentally about it. And the lady on the seat next to me saw me putting the book away and took the opportunity to tell me that she had just read the book herself, and it was so wonderful, and it had helped her so much. And she was just so thankful to the gal, Jay-Z Knight, that had written the book and that had done this work. And that taught me a lot right there, because I realized that any channeling, regardless of its power or its polarity, any words that you get from another human being or that you get from channeling, anything that you're drawn to that resonates to you is for you. Now, this can lead you down some blind alleys. You can be attracted to a mixed polarity message, and you can discover that you've been had, and then you have to back out of the alley and move on. That's fine. That's the way we learn. That's perfectly all right. But if you want ways to judge material, I can give you a couple of pointers that are really easy to follow in terms of how to judge the polarity of a contact. If the contact brings to you a feeling of being lifted up and strengthened and encouraged, then it is probably a positive contact. If it gives you the feeling, in spite of all the positive words, of fear or impending doom, worry, distress, concern, that kind of feeling, then it is probably a mixed contact or a negative contact. In other words, either a mixture of service to others and service to self concepts, or service to self entirely. Now, a good many contacts that you will find start out very positive. And you really can read through the first few transmissions from such a channel and find nothing negative therein. Nothing that makes you wince, nothing that makes you contract within or have fear. But what happens to a lot of channels is that they're eager to serve, and so they will entertain any question that anybody asks. And a lot of questions are questions that are fear-based. Other questions are specific questions that have no spiritual content. If you're trying to grab hold of and channel a metaphysical source, that metaphysical source, being positive, will not be able to respond adequately to a fear-based question. It will not be able to respond adequately to a specific question that has no spiritual content. So you will end up getting nothing from your contact, except we do not prefer to answer that query because of infringing on free will or some dead-end answer like that lasts 10 seconds and that's it. There's dead space after that. There's nothing more to say. And a lot of contact, a lot of people that do this work don't want to say, I don't know. It's just an extension of your basic ego, which does not like to be put in the wrong. So there are a lot of channels that have made the unskillful choice of answering every question, regardless of getting that first, you know, we refrain from answering because of not infringing on free will. And when they do that, what they're doing is they're picking up another station. They're picking up another source, another type of transmission. The reason that negative entities can successfully pretend to be positive entities is that both negative and positive use the same light. They feel the same. There isn't any way to tell the difference. That's why challenging the spirits is so very important when you're setting up to channel. It's very important to do that. So if you don't tune yourself to your highest and best and then ask for the contact that is compatible with your tuning and then challenge that spirit to make sure that the spirit is not attempting to lead you astray, then you are likely to be slipping in and out of your tuning and in and out of your ability to channel positive entities. And so you just go right on having no idea that you slipped into channeling a negatively oriented entity that wants to distract you as much as it wants to illuminate you. This is for mixed contact. Now, for negative contact, there's no question that they just want to distract you or put out your light, take you off the path one way or another. So there are all kinds of considerations like this. But there's a gut feeling when you read channeling and you get to the end of a transmission. And how does that make you feel? Well, if it made you feel really uplifted, then you're probably dealing with a positive channeling. The next question you need to ask is, did any of this information resonate with me? Is there some thought amongst these channeled words that I want to take further? Is there something I want to work with? And when you've answered yes, it feels very positive and uplifting to me, and yes, I'm resonating with this and I want to work with it, then you're in good shape, because I think you can trust your own discernment. I Googled on this particular contact because I was not familiar with Salau Uba. And as usual, I see that the opinions are pretty well divided between it's a hoax and it's real. I've known entities who were taken on board. I've written them up for Flying Saucer Review in England and for the Mutual UFO Network here in the United States. Back in the 70s, Don Elkins and I went through a period where we did a lot of physical UFO research until we became satisfied subjectively that the physical UFO phenomena are real. After the contact that I had starting in 74, and especially after the raw contact in the early 80s, we gave up doing field research for MUFON and for Flying Saucer Review and for others, APRO and NICAP and other other initials that are in that area of UFO research, because we were satisfied that it was real. We had nothing to prove to ourselves. And there was a limited amount of information that you could get from a physical UFO, whereas the potential for the channeling end of, you know, metaphysical UFO contact or contact with alleged ETs seemed to be infinite, seemed to be an ever-expanding thing. And I still feel that way. So I would never tell somebody, well, just don't read that channeling because it's a mess. I would say, well, be discriminating. You know, take from that mixed source what feels good to you and what resonates to you and work with that. And when you're done with it, then move on. I've even told people who write in and say, well, I've run into a problem with the Law of One. Usually people have a problem with the Law of One because of a question about service to self and service to others. That seems to be something that trips people up a lot. And they say, I'm having trouble with this, and I think maybe I need to understand more. Well, I'll be glad to explain anything that I myself feel that I understand. But there's a point beyond which people are just feeling betrayed and upset. And I tell people like that, I said, don't try to hang on to the Law of One. I said, if this isn't working for you, move on. And people are going, well, but you love the Law of One. You're the channel for the Law of One. I said, yeah, but that doesn't mean that I intended for people to have to swallow it whole. The whole point here is to provide spiritually helpful material for people. If it's spiritually helpful, use it. If it's not spiritually helpful, move on. And you're the only one that can say what resonates to you and what is spiritually helpful. So trust yourself. Even when you make mistakes, you're still the same person that you were before you made the mistake. Say, whoops, I guess that one was a big mistake. I just didn't see that coming. Back out of the alley that you were in. And keep reading, keep looking. If that's your pleasure, by all means do so. But don't at any point sit down in the road and say, well, that's it. I am done. I understand all that there is to understand. Because the next instant will prove you wrong. and you will have a challenge to that point of view.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, very good. Well, we have one remaining question, and probably that's going to wrap up the show. Looks like we've got about 10 or 15 minutes left. The last question from the Bring Forth Forum is from TurtleDude23. Hi, Carla. How did you and Jim achieve green ray and higher sexual energy transfers? Ross suggested studying tantric yoga, but there's so many of them, and a lot of them are STS. Any books or methods you could recommend? Thanks.
Hi, 23. As it happens, I just wrote an article about that, and you're welcome to read it. You can go to www.bringforth.org, and Monica will spell that at the end of the program because it's not spelled like it sounds. And I think my you can get to a link to my my articles from there, or you can go to llresearch.org and click on Carla's Niche, and there are ways to get into my articles from there. Or you can simply go to the UPI site itself, which is where I blog, and it's www.religionandspirituality, spelled right but all one word, .com. And then click on me, or just on the homepage. I think it'll probably still be on the homepage because I just wrote it last week. And it's an article about my husband and I and sacred sexuality. In truth, 23, I do not know of a linear way to approach sacred sexuality. I believe that it is a matter of cooperating with your nature. Now, your nature starts at red ray. So unless you're attracted to somebody, you're not going to be able to have the opportunity for sacred sexuality with that person, because you just really do need to have some chemistry there to work with. You can't just cuddle with somebody and not actually have sexual relations with that person and still be able to break through all of the barriers that you break through. But you start with the red ray. You start with the attraction that you have on a physical level. Your body has to cooperate here. You know, you can't just do it with your head. But a lot of it is in your head. Okay, when my husband and I first met, we had no trouble achieving green ray sexuality, and that was because both of us had lived very cleanly in terms of our sexuality. In other words, when we had taken a sexual partner, we had taken that sexual partner with our hearts wide open, not in any sense trying to manipulate or use that person or take advantage of that person, but really appreciating that person's essence. And so right away, we had a big plus. We had open-hearted sex. And that's the first thing that you need to do. And in order to do that as a married couple or as a couple that has a relationship that is stable enough to hope for sacred sexuality, you've got to work through some things. You've got to work through your orange ray chakra and your yellow ray chakra to get to the green ray chakra. If you have a desire to possess someone or the desire to be possessed by someone, you're going to have overactivity or narrowed, tight activity in your orange ray chakra. If you are married, then there are many things that can come between you that can create the first brick that can become a wall, that can become impenetrable. So you need to take time for each sexual encounter, not having sex, but opening your energy body. And the first thing you do, I think, really, you know, have a little glass of wine or something that helps you to relax with each other and talk over anything that may be between you. Bring up the things that might create the first brick in the wall between you, and open to that person, so that you are in your heart with that person, and that person is in his heart with you. Okay. The next thing that you need to do is elevate that discussion to the blue ray level. In other words, tell the absolute truth. This is the hardest thing, I think, and this is where Jim and I got stuck. We were stuck there for quite a few years, really, from 80 when we first connected with each other until 94. 14 years we were stuck at the blue ray level because there were things we didn't talk about. He was wishing to have a romantic relationship, but it wasn't with me. And I felt very strongly for him and was very swayed by him and thought that he was just the greatest guy in the world and loved him dearly. And I was sort of ready to be in love with him, but it was blocked because I realized he didn't want that energy. And he was looking for love desperately, but I wasn't one of the people that he really considered. And what happened to us was like a miracle. We were in the water, and I write about this in the article, off the coast of South Carolina the day before a hurricane, and a riptide came through. A man and his son were swept out to sea just at the beach, just maybe a quarter mile from where we were at Polly's Island. So it was a very serious problem, and we got caught in the riptide too. And we were taken out to where Jim couldn't put his feet down and neither could I. Well, this didn't bother me right away, but it bothered Jim because he really isn't any kind of a good swimmer. He's heavy as lead in the water, whereas I swim like an otter. So I realized, okay, the first thing that has to happen here is Jim's got to be safe. So I prayed, and you know, I was a senior lifesaver. I know how to save somebody if I can swim, but I wasn't strong enough to swim against this current. It was just taking us out very quickly. And so I prayed, and I said, you know, what do I do? And I got this momentary impression of getting behind him and curling my feet up against my body and then putting them against his bottom and shoving him with everything, every piece of strength in my body. And when I did that, I immediately did that. You know, things happen very quickly when you're in a crisis. When I did that, it was as if the sea behind me stood behind me like a wall so that I had the ability to use all of my strength to shove him. And I got him into shore. He was able to walk out of the ocean, and he was safe. Once he was safe, I was really happy. I mean, even if I had died, it really, you know, just the fact that I had been able to save him, I was just so thrilled. But I was thinking for a while that this might be the day I'd die because there was nobody else on the beach. Everybody had been ordered off of it. We just hadn't left yet. I thought, well, it's a beautiful day to die. And so I quit struggling. I quit trying to swim because it was wearing me out very quickly. And I just relaxed in the water, and I float like unbelievably well. So I was floating not on my back but on my stomach, and just my nose just above the waves. And I was just like a little water bug hanging on the top of the water, trying to expend as little energy as possible. I figured at some point it would occur to Jim to call the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard would send a cutter. I would be taken out of the water and I would be saved eventually, but it might take 2 or 3 hours, and so I better conserve my energy. So I was just hanging out and resting and enjoying the day and consigning my soul to the infinite creator. And all of a sudden, this great big wave whooshes me right into shore. And I barely made it out because my legs were just rubber. You know, I expended all my energy pretty much as far as my legs in that one big shove, which got Jim into shore. But we both came away safe. Well, after that happened, he changed. It wasn't that he fell in love with me on the spot. That wasn't to happen for probably years yet. But the concrete around his very defended heart shattered. And all of a sudden, he was laughing at my bad puns. And I was going, what's going on here? He's treating me differently. It was very distracting at first because I was used to him being very sarcastic about how bad my puns were. And they are. They're just terrible. But he was enjoying them all of a sudden. And he enjoyed me in a way that he never had before. And eventually, he fell in love with me. And we were equal in our feeling for each other. And I think that was the penny that needed to drop for us to get to sacred sexuality. Once we were able to relate to each other, romantically speaking, as equals, we then had to choose to talk out every issue that had built up between us while we were not, there were places we were not going with each other. We just weren't going to talk about that or that because it made us sad. So we got all of that talking done over a period of years. And then we just began to experience moments and then longer moments and then the whole energy exchange being filled with the Creator. And at first it was, oh my goodness, you know, this is so incredible, but this is probably all that we can do. We can't do anymore. But then something more would happen. And at this point in our lives, the Creator is in the lead completely, and we are just happy to follow. So it's a matter of clearing yourself out, making yourself purely service to others where that person is concerned. Clearing your energy body. Invoking the Creator, setting your intention to include the Creator in sexuality, in your sexual expression with each other. And then just focusing on that beautiful energy that's between two people when they are offering each other a dance in the fields of the Lord and giving each other pleasure. And just letting that sort of electrical energy connect and get stronger and do what it will with you. And it is sometimes a little, it would be surprising to somebody outside the relationship to hear us, because we may pray, we may sing. I especially might start the Magnificat or the Te Deum Laudamus from my church experience. I praise you, O Lord. I acknowledge you to be the Lord. All the earth doth worship you, the Father everlasting. And this is not what you'd call normal sex, but it's an expression of a person's feelings when the Creator is part of your lovemaking. And you promise when you get married that the Creator will be part of the lovemaking. So it's all set up for you, even by the society that doesn't really know what it's doing. But then you see you have to cooperate. You need to set time aside, give it the respect that it needs, give it the time that it takes, and then give it some years so that you can be entirely easy and honest with each other and still make it to green ray, to blue ray, and then the blessed indigo.
Okay, what an intense topic that is. Sounds like we could definitely spend even more time on that, but we are out of time. Carla, thank you so much for that. We're going to wrap it up. And you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Liel. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org. LL Research's archive website is home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. Bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4, TH, bringforth.org, is LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. Or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, November 5th at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern.